Suzanne Hunter bringing you the world of arts and entertainment in Surrey and beyond on Brooklyn's Radio.
Now it's a true pleasure to welcome Motown legend Martha Reeves. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Suzanne. This is really wonderful.
Now, it's very hard to believe that this year marks the 50th anniversary of the gold record Dancing in the Streets. What do you think it is about it that makes that song one of the most played radio records in history?
I get a feeling when I first hear the trumpets, when Dancing in the Streets starts, the same feeling that I remembered watching bullfights in Spain, the trumpet of those wonderful musicians at Motown. Kind of make me want to get up, and I think it affects everybody else that same way because I want to get up and start dancing. It's a marvelous track, and I have to tell people when I first heard the song, Marvin Gaye was singing it. I had finished my, we had a class every day. If we weren't on the road, we were in the studio going to school, and they had named that department Artist Development. And I had finished my 6 hours, two with Maxine Powell. She taught us self-worth and proper etiquette, the way to carry oneself. I guess she taught self-esteem. And we had Maurice King and Johnny Allen, who taught music theory. And then we had Charlie Atkins of the Honey Cole team, Colin Atkins from Vaudeville. He taught us the proper way to dance with our feet, and he was such an elegant and dancing man until all of us sort of danced the same way. We all had classes. He taught the Supremes. He taught the Temptations. He taught Gladys Knight and the Pips prior to them coming to Motown. In fact, they recommended Charlie Atkins. So we had some wonderful teachers, and they taught us. And when I first heard the song Dancing in the Street, this tall, good-looking man with his eyes slightly closed was singing it on a mic, and he was singing like a ballad, like as if he were singing to just a friend that he was going to spend the day with. You're like, calling all around the world, are you ready for a brand new beat, baby? Something like Marvin Gaye style. And so I was standing there in awe. I used to follow him around because I thought he was one of the most talented people that I'd ever seen. He played all the instruments on most of his recordings, and he had such a lovely voice and a sweet personality. Anyway, he looked over in the corner and saw me and said to William Stevenson, known as Mickey, Ivy Hunter, his co-writers, said to them, hey, man, let's try this song on Martha. Well, immediately, I had learned the song, standing there listening to him sing it. I felt that if I could sing it the way I felt it, it would be good. So they said, well, go ahead, sing it the way you hear it. So then I came calling out a rock because in my neighborhood, when I was young, my dad worked for the city of Detroit. He and another friend who was also employed by the city asked if the police would put those horses up and let us use the yellow ribbon, or what do you call that, the yellow banners to stop traffic so that we could dance in the street on our own block. And I thought that was a special thing. So that came to my mind, how everybody had record players, and they put them on their front porches. We had a neighborhood with houses so close together, you could hear everybody snoring. But it was a wonderful thing when we got all the food from the families and the record players on the front porch and just danced on those cobblestone streets. And that's what came to my mind. And then remembering Rio de Janeiro and remembering New Orleans at carnival time, that's the same thing that Dancing in the Street, when I hear it, does for me. I remember all those wonderful things. People just dancing and feeling free to dance without anyone bothering them, no danger, just love and dance. And Dancing in the Street, you know, written by Marvin Gaye, Ivy Hunter, and William Stevenson, has been copied by so many artists until they agree with me that it's a great song.
Definitely. I mean, it's your unique vocals as well on that. It's just, it's unmatchable. And, I mean, the Motown music just makes you feel so good, doesn't it? It's just part of the whole, you know, ethic of it, really, isn't it? It's just amazing.
Well, being from a large family, having 6 brothers and 4 sisters, and then coming to Motown and being another part of another family is one of the greatest thrills, one of the greatest gifts from God. Everybody on that label is talented. I was chosen and asked to come there by William Stevenson. A lot of the artists were recommended to Motown or came there hoping to be a part, but they had to be really good at what they do. It wasn't like we went there to learn to sing. We already had learned to sing maybe in our churches or in our schools. But most of the people there were very, extremely talented, and the judge of all that talent was Berry Gordy himself. He would have auditions, and the people would run the artists by him, and if he approved of them, then they could become a Motown artist. So it was a special place to be. It's a place that even now when I visit the studio, the museum at 2648 West Gun Boulevard, I take people in there, and you can still feel that aura. You can still feel that wonderful magic that happened in that room.
I mean, going back, you know, you had long wanted to be part of the emerging Detroit label, you know, Motown. But after your audition, you found yourself responsible for helping the acts. How did that all come about?
No, I didn't have an audition.
Oh.
I went there that day that I was, the next day after being invited by William Stevenson, and I showed up with a card in my hand, but I walked past about a good 50 people, 50 to 100 people in line waiting to get in to meet the famous Berry Gordy and to get an audition. This is a brand new record company, and everybody had welcomed Mary Wells singing my Bye Bye Baby, You Beat Me to the Punch, and then finally my guy, some of the best songs of Smokey Robinson's composition. People had heard it, and they knew about Marv Johnson, who had a record called You Got What It Takes. They also heard about Eddie Holland, who was a producer, but he also had a number one record called Jamie before I got to the company, before I was invited. And there were people sitting on that porch waiting to see the Miracles, waiting to see Mary Wells, and hoped to get a contract himself. So I walked past them with this card that I had been given the night before by William Stevenson, who gave it to me after an amateur performance as Martha Lovell. He gave me the card and said, "You have talent, come to Hitsville, USA." So upon arrival, that next morning at secretary time, I quit my 9-to-5 job at the cleaners. I had a dry cleaning job, and I quit that job at Citywide Cleaners, and I went straight to Hitsville, USA the next day. Dad had taught me how to ride the bus from the east side to the west side. So it's a wonderful thing to have been able to walk up to the receptionist with that card and to finally get let in inside after a door was buzzed and I stepped to the other side. There was this genie that I'd met the night before who had given me a card and invited me to this wonderful company. And the history is written right after that. I never left. I stayed all day. And in about 3 weeks, started getting a salary as A&R secretary. However, I didn't get an audition and didn't go there to be a secretary. I went there to sing, and I just got in where I fit in, I guess. Yeah. He asked me to answer the phone. He'd be right back. He was gone for 3 or 4 hours. So, hey, I'd taken over. I started taking messages, yeah. And I answered the phone. I greeted the artists, and all the 17 producers seemed to have come to work that day because every one of them came and asked who I was because I was in the famous A&R department answering the phone, a total stranger to some. I knew some of the musicians because my career didn't start at Hitsville. I had also recorded before on a record label called Checkmate with the Delphi's. So, and I had also done a lot of backup work on Berry Gordy's wife's record company label. She was Thelma Records. And then I'd also worked with some of Anna Gay's record company artists, like sang background for maybe a lot of her artists at the time. They both had recording companies prior to Berry Gordy. So he was well influenced and very supported by the people in the business. But having walked past and seen William Stevenson answer that phone, stayed there all day, I did demonstration records.
So I guess it's that age-old adage of the right place at the right time. You backed on Marvin Gaye's first three releases. How was it to work with him?
Well, Marvin Gaye was such a wonderful artist and such a wonderful talent. When William Stevenson came back after those 3 hours of leaving me in that studio in the A&R department, he expressed that he was writing a song for this drummer that was fourth on the list. And I'm having a problem. I'm back in the studio. I'm back in the studio letting everybody know that the union did come in and I had to be put on a mic right away to save the face of the company because they'd been told they had to have an artist on the mic when they recorded. So I was asked to sing a song called I Have to Let Him Go, which was Mary Wells' song. She was leaving, however, and when Berry heard it, he asked Mickey Stevenson, whose voice was that? And Mickey said, oh, that's my secretary, who he had started referring me to as his secretary after 9 months, of course. And he said, well, put this out on her. That's how I got my recording. That's how I got introduced to Motown Records.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Okay, then you asked me about Marvin Gaye. Okay, Marvin was such a wonderful guy, but we didn't work with him except to sing backup for him. And I was on a few shows in the very beginning. We sang on Stubborn Kind of Fella, Hitchhike, and Pride and Joy. And we recorded those in the days where they only had four tracks. So we sang on the same mic with Marvin and had such a wonderful time. And we saw how good-looking he was when he took that hat off his head. He wore had a tendency to wear sunglasses all the time, and he kept a pipe in his mouth. He had removed all that and started singing. And I guess when we said, doop, 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 ow, it was because Marvin was so handsome and so good-looking. And it was Gloria Williamson, one of the girls who decided not to travel or become a recording artist with us from the Delphi's. She made up the backup part. She was very talented.
Yeah, that's amazing.
She was one who did not sign. There used to be four of us, and she decided not to travel.
Oh, okay. There's some great, wonderful songs there. So memorable. I mean, the unique thing about Motown was the artists were matched so perfectly with the songwriters. What was your relationship like with the men who wrote for you, Holland, Dozier, Holland?
Well, when I first went to Motown, William Stevenson was the one who asked me there, so he was the first one to record me on a Merriwell song, I'll Have to Let Him Go. Holland Dozier Holland had just formed the team because Eddie Holland, having a hit with Jamie, decided, well, he didn't not necessarily want to travel or be on the stage or be out front. He wanted to write with his brother Brian, who was also an aspiring singer, and Lamont Dozier, who had a record out at that time, too, called What Goes Up Must Come Down. He was a gentle passage of their talents onto us because most of the producers sang. So when Eddie Holland asked me to sing Come and Get These Memories, and Brian and Lamont worked on the background vocalist, it took James Jameson to show us that three-part jazz harmony. But they asked us to sing this song, and it's really a remarkable song. Working with them was like Eddie giving me vocals, Brian working with the backup vocals, and Lamont playing the piano, and all three of them singing the parts so we could understand three-part harmony, along with James Jameson, who helped us understand three-part harmony.
Yeah, it must have been an amazing collaboration, you know? Really collaborative feeling. Fantastic.
That's our situation. We're a three-part harmony group.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, with your work, it's so hard to single out any songs, as they were all hits, and to this day, they simply can't be topped. I mean, we only had to think of Love Is Like a Heat Wave, which is a phenomenal success for you, number one in the R&B charts and Grammy nominated. And then there's Jimmy Mack, Nowhere to Run, so many great songs, and your unique vocals, of course. What do you personally think makes a smash hit?
I can't think about it. I can only do it. Get a good song with good, meaningful lyrics,
yes.
Which is not the thing today. People are getting beats and talking to them. But the formula for us worked because we would get a good song with a good heartfelt meaning to it,
yes.
Something that would affect not only our lives but everyone else's.
Mm.
And then they were always critiqued by Berry Gordy, who made sure that we didn't offend anyone or come out with anything that would be of any harm, hurt, or danger to anyone.
Yes.
So it was all about a process. It was all about knowing you have a good song, getting the best musicians you can. And we were privileged because our musicians were jazz learned professors.
Yes.
They had degrees from different colleges, and they also were arrangers. So the producers, who would sometimes come and just give them a chord sheet as a structure for a song to lay as a foundation. These guys would come up with bass lines like James Jameson or drum pickups and hot licks like Benny Benjamin and Earl Jones and Pistol Allen.
Yeah.
And then have fine keyboard players like Earl Van Dyke and Joe Hunter. I mean, just fantastic musicians,
yes,
who stayed in the studio all day. They didn't travel with us. The only time we worked with Earl Van Dyke and his band was when we came to do a Dusty Springfield's invitation, Ready, Steady, Go, Tacular.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Oh.
And when the Supremes and the Miracles came over on that particular invitation, no one knew them. They had to be introduced to the UK artists.
It's incredible now, isn't it, to think, you know, how phenomenally well-known you all are, that anyone would be like that. But, of course, it was a new emerging thing, wasn't it?
The beautiful Dusty Springfield who inspired it all, and I always give her credit.
Yes, yes.
Always. She invited us, and it was one of the best BBC presentations. I'm surprised we didn't get an award. And if we did, I hope I see one. Vicky Wickham was the producer, and we owe a lot to her, too. But they worked as a team, and it was a great production, and it introduced us, and I'm always grateful forever to Dave Godden, who had a Motown Appreciation Society, who introduced us to most of the mods and rockers, and a lot of fans who celebrated us when we first came over. The same way that the Beatles were celebrated here in America, well, we stopped Heathrow Airport to come over, so it was a special thing.
It's amazing, isn't it, really? But very rightly so. I mean, 60s is such a vibrant time, wasn't it? There were so many wonderful influences, and I mean, Motown was really, really up there, and it still is. It's still loved so much the world over. I mean, no one to this day can match the look, the feel, the style, and the sound of Motown. It's so slick and so polished. Was it tough, or did you enjoy the discipline of that?
You know, people look at it one way, but we were emulating and copying other people that had gone on before us. So it can be done again, but in whosoever way that does it. But there's like every 7 years there's a generational change, and you can see almost the same spirit in the music and the work, but it's not the same, you know, it's not the same people. But I can see that we tried to emulate the people in vaudeville because we had a vaudeville instructor. And I had studied opera, and I also had a desire to sing it, to sing opera, and based a lot of my singing on the opera movements that I learned in elementary school and high school. So, you know, music evolves, but, you know, there'll be another fantastic record company to come out and to do wonderful things with youth like Berry Gordy did. But I will admit that it's unique and one of a kind record company.
I think so. I definitely agree with that. I mean, I didn't realize about the opera, Martha, but I do understand that you've you headlined a musical touring company with Eight Misbehaving.
I also did Eight Misbehaving.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's amazing. And did you find musical theater another great challenge?
No, I always wanted to sing, and all I did was just apply myself and enjoy. I don't want to sound like I'm bragging or anything, but everybody didn't get the gift of song. Everybody, you know, I think it has to do with bone structure. It has to do with your mind.
Yes.
It has to do with your training. And from the very beginning, at the age of three, my mom taught me songs to sing in our grandfather's church. We actually competed on a Saturday night and won candy. My two brothers, Thomas, Benny, and I. And, you know, I've been singing all my life. So every parcel of me is musical. I mean, my life, I'm not that great a cook. I travel too much to keep a good house.
Yeah.
It's just a marvelous thing knowing that I have the treasure of songs that people relate to, get up and dance to, and, and they know better than I do sometimes because... As we get older, sometimes our mind will go somewhere else. But
I'm sure they'll sing along with you.
You know, I've had some of the fans correct me, say, you know, you didn't say the right line here. Because they've cherished the music and learned it, you know, so well. And have welcomed us back so much.
Yeah, I'm sure people will be singing along. They know all the words, don't they? I mean, it's just...
They think I should move there. I've been there five times this year. I've crossed the Atlantic three times. Five times this year.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Yes, because I was going to say, it's very, I think it's wonderful, actually, that you've played the UK just about every year since 1962, even before the Motown Review, with singers like Georgie Fame. I mean, do you always have a blast when you come over?
I feel at home.
Mm.
I'm really sincere when I say it is our mother country. It's where all of our thoughts and books and all of our education comes from, so I feel at home. I feel like I've found the other part of my world when I'm in the UK. It's not just the UK that we travel to, but my feelings and my ability to get around. I can ride your tube.
Yes.
I get away from Birmingham and I can come back into London for an evening and get back to Birmingham on an off day. So I have good time.
Yeah.
Seeing it developed, you know, before when we first started coming in 62, it was a very small place, and it had tiny roads, two-way, used to horse drawn carriages, and had some entrances very close to the door of the street, cobblestone streets, and I've seen it develop where you have, motorways.
Oh, yeah, we're getting with the times now.
M2 and M5.
Oh,
so,
yeah. It's busy.
I've seen... transportation change. The cars are still tiny, but I see a lot of Fords and a lot of...
Get our 4x4s.
Mobiles. The automobiles are amazing. And not only that, I see a lot of thoroughbred pets.
Yes.
unlike, you know, so I feel like it's home. I notice a lot of things that have grown, and just my ability to go about and find the boots and get what I need and enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it? You're going to be coming over to the UK, which is very exciting. Got some a small UK tour, but also you're going to be coming on a longer tour in April, May and June 2015. So, I mean, fans are going to need to keep checking your website for news of the festivals. So you're looking forward to that? Yeah.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Exactly. And we need to book you a space for Glastonbury as well, because I think you need to be there. Your inclination towards Glastonbury?
Well, yes, I've been there several times, and I'm looking forward to it again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful stuff. I mean, going back in time, of course, you know, not only have you sung with the marvelous Vandellas, of course, you'll be performing with them in the UK this month, but you've also sung
with... Well, say it right, darling. Said they'll be performing with me. Please say it.
And very lucky they will be, too.
Okay.
I mean, you've also sung with the likes of Bruce Springsteen, Marvin Gaye, James Brown, and also you've had a hit with DJ Crystal Method, which led to a top 25 dance hit, I'm Not Leaving. I mean, it's very diverse,
yes,
isn't it? I mean, how do you find working with all these artists? Very different,
I expect. I have the variety and the experience and the joy of working with whoever, because this business is so vast and everybody's music is so loved. Mm. It's a joy working with whoever and whenever. I have the ability to collaborate, and I do on occasion.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I guess after the discipline of being in Motown, working with perfectionists like James Brown must have been a bit of a walk in the park. How was it for you?
Well, yes, we also toured with Marvin Gaye and James Brown, the Crystals, Bo Diddley, the Drifters.
Oh, wow.
We all did a tour, and there was a competition between Marvin Gaye and James Brown as far as tuxedos are concerned. Marvin would come on just before James, and James had a truck of tuxedos and fancy suits with ribbons down the side of the leg, you know, just fancy stuff, ruffles. And James would always change and dress almost in the same color that Marvin Gaye had on. So that working with some fabulous people, I mean, I can name nearly every American act, and I've worked with them. The ones that have gone on to heaven and some that are yet here. So from my generation, I hope and anticipate working with younger artists. That do music.
Yes, exactly.
In the future.
Exactly. And they'll be working with you, Martha. That's more important.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been wonderful talking about, you know, all the costumes as well. I mean, that's obviously another wonderful part of Motown. Did you enjoy all the glamorous outfits that you got to wear and still wear?
We're still wearing them, and we're still in costume. That was one of the Motown customs. Mm. They wanted to make sure that everybody dressed properly for stage.
Yes.
So you wouldn't see me with the holding in the Jean Knee outfit with the see-through top. You wouldn't see me in that kind of a dress.
No, and, I'm glad to say.
Neither will you see any Motown artists, because it was part of the look, part of the custom to be properly dressed for the stage.
Yes. I mean, it's wonderful. Well, I'm sure we're going to see you in a gorgeous costume, because it's so wonderful that you're commemorating the 50 years of Dancing in the Street and celebrating with a series of tour dates in the UK. And you're going to be at the London Brooklyn Bowl, I believe, and also the Marbles Factory in Bristol. These are two new venues for you. Are you looking forward to those?
I'm looking very forward to it, and I'm trying my work to one day lead me to meet our queen.
Absolutely. You never know who's going to pop down to these
four lords and ladies, and perhaps we'll move up in our performings to one day be presented to our beautiful queen.
So we need another jubilee now, don't we?
I keep calling her mine, because I've had enough money with a picture on it to know that she's all right.
She scrubs up well. Oh, fantastic. And, of course, what with moving on to the Christmas word, with the magical time of year, as well as the tour, you've... recently finished working on some Christmas songs, which I'm sure will be amazing. Is there any that you can tell us of?
I'm going to bring them with me and pray to God that I have put a couple in the act so that people know how I feel about the Christmas season and the mere fact that I did completely complete my course to receive my doctorate in humanities, and also have my master's in religious studies. So I'm working on trying to get the word out for those who don't know that Jesus is the reason for the season.
Yes.
And Christ being born in a manger. And I love to tell the story about how here's a woman pregnant, and no one would let her have a baby. She couldn't find anywhere to go except in a manger.
Exactly.
And the cattle were there, and everything was wonderful with the stars, and it turned out to be a real good party.
Dancing in the streets, dancing in the manger.
Yeah, he got beautiful gifts, and stars twinkled in the sky, and oh, the animals were all singing his praises. So it had to be a wonderful occasion,
yeah,
and I try to spread that message.
Absolutely, it's a joyous time, isn't it? And I don't think anyone could spread the message better than yourself, Martha. So
and I'm singing joy. The Lord is come. I'm singing that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love that song. It's amazing. I mean, talking of celebrations, when you came to the Arches in Glasgow, which is another venue that you're going to be doing, the audience made you feel very special, didn't they? They were singing to you. Did that warm your heart?
I'm sitting there trying to get used to having turned 72, right? And here's a whole audience of people who I don't even know if we could understand each other's language. Because they're, you know, from Scotland, and we're from southern Alabama. But there's an audience of beautiful people, and before I could sing my second song, I'm about to bow and say, hello, everybody. They break into this beautiful happy birthday that sounded like the biggest choir you could gather.
Aww.
And it was just so wonderful. I couldn't hardly continue. Aww. I've never had such thrill in my life. It was wonderful.
Oh, well, that's wonderful, isn't it? Like you say, in the common language of music, you know, it just moves us all, doesn't it? And I'm sure they were thrilled to see.
And everybody knows the words and they all sing them. Everybody sings them.
Absolutely.
And I'm loving it.
Oh, that's brilliant, isn't it? I mean,
yes, it is.
It's very exciting for the fans because you're re-releasing your 1976 album, The Rest of My Life, on December the 15th, which is just great.
Isn't that amazing?
It's great, isn't it? You're looking forward to having that reborn again?
I'm listening to having a new copy of it so I could listen to it over and over again. The Rest of My Life is an album that was recorded on Arista, and the producer, Clive Davis, had me work with various writers and producers. And You've Lost That Loving Feeling is one of the songs. Now That We Found Love is one of the songs. And I recorded my version before Heat Wave. I want everybody to know that. I did just such a wonderful variety of songs. This Time I'll Be Sweeter was a song written by Gwen Guthrie, and she had worked with Roberta Flack. But after I recorded their song, Roberta Flack chose to record it again, too, along with Spanky Wilson and a few other people. So This Time I'll Be Sweeter, I have to claim it's my song as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds an absolutely remarkable album. So many great songs, so many great collaborations. Well, Martha, I just cannot wait to see you on stage, as I know many, many of your fans will be in anticipation of the 12th of December at the London Brooklyn Bowl and all the other dates up and down the country that you're doing.
Well, I look forward to meeting you as well.
Yeah.
Promise?
Definitely. I'll come meet you if you'd like to meet me. That'd be great. I do wish you all the very best with your upcoming projects as well. And I must say, it's been an absolute honour to speak with you, a real true Motown legend. Thank you very much.
And you're delightful. And thank you for looking on these senior citizens and giving us some play.
Bless you. Oh, you're beautiful and sparkling. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, okay.
And that was the remarkable Martha Reeves.
Brooklyn's Radio.